The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Now what? Donald Trump pulled the trigger, and Qasem Soleimani won't be coming home for dinner tonight. He was blown to bits by a drone last night at the Baghdad airport. Republicans are cheering, Democrats are criticizing, and there are lots of dire predictions about what to expect now. Here's what the president said a little while ago.
The United States military successfully executed a flawless precision strike that killed the number one terrorist anywhere in the world, Qasem Soleimani. Soleimani was plotting imminent and sinister attacks on American diplomats and military personnel, but we caught him in the act and terminated him. Under my leadership, America's policy is unambiguous to terrorists who harm or intend to harm any American. We will find you. We will eliminate you. We will always protect our diplomats, service members, all Americans, and our allies. For years, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and its ruthless Quds force under Soleimani's leadership has targeted, injured, and murdered hundreds of American civilians and servicemen. The recent attacks on U.S. targets in Iraq, including rocket strikes that killed an American and injured four American servicemen very badly, as well as a violent assault on our embassy in Baghdad, were carried out at the direction of Soleimani. Soleimani made the death of innocent people his sick passion, contributing to terrorist plots as far away as New Delhi and London. Today we remember and honor the victims of Soleimani's many atrocities, and we take comfort in knowing that his reign of terror is over.
Over. And when we come back, we'll talk to a guy who saw Soleimani's work firsthand in Afghanistan. He's also running for Congress against Connor Lamb in District 17. Sean Parnell coming up. Stick around.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's largest mortgage lender. Let's talk credit card debt for a minute. If you feel you're carrying too much of it, you're not alone. The average household in the U.S. carries over $8,000 in credit card debt. Ready for some good news? With a cash-out refinance from Quicken Loans, you can quickly and easily put some of the equity in your home to good use by paying off a lot of that high-interest credit card debt. A great way to take cash out is with our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.99%. APR 4.23%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN to learn how taking cash out with a 30-year fixed mortgage might be the right solution for you. And for a record 10 years in a row, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Rates subject to change. Pay 2% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
I'm Andy Solomon. T-Mobile has launched the country's first and only nationwide 5G network covering more than 5,000 cities and towns all across the country. Here's Senior Vice President of Network Engineering and Development, Mark McDermott.
This launch immediately catapults T-Mobile into a position as the country's biggest 5G network, covering more than 1 million square miles beyond the big cities to the small towns, and that's just the start.
And now available are two new 5G superphones that can access nationwide 5G, the exclusive OnePlus 7T Pro 5G McLaren and the Samsung Galaxy Note 10 Plus 5G.
And we'll be able to supercharge the 5G network with more speed and capacity if the pending merger with Sprint closes.
This holiday season, get a great deal on a 5G phone at T-Mobile. For more information, visit T-Mobile.com.
Shopping online this holiday season? Finding the perfect gift from your computer, tablet, or smartphone is a breeze. Just a few taps, and you're done. But all that online shopping, it could expose your personal information and leave you potentially vulnerable to identity theft. And you may miss certain identity threats by just monitoring your credit, like someone selling your info on the dark web or taking an online payday loan in your name. Good thing there's LifeLock. They monitor your personal information, and if you have a problem with identity theft, they work to fix it. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But LifeLock offers something that's perfect for the holidays and beyond. Not having to worry if identity theft happens to you. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year. Go to LifeLock.com and use promo code SMART. That's promo code SMART at LifeLock.com to save 25% off.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 3388 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 3388. Enjoy.
This is the John Steigerwald Show on AM 1250 and FM 92.5. The Answer.
Okay, we're waiting for Sean Parnell. I haven't gotten hold of him yet, but I was going to ask him about, obviously we wanted to talk about what Connor Lamb's reaction to this might be, and we will talk to him about that when we get him on the air, but I'm looking here at Penn Live from the Patriot News, and it has the comments from every PA lawmaker responding to Trump's airstrike. And I'm going down the list, and Bob Casey has a comment. Pat Toomey, the two senators. Representative Brian Fitzpatrick from the 1st District. Everybody's on here. Dwight Evans, 3rd District. They're all here. Let's see who else. I mean, everybody. U.S. Representative Mary Gay Scanlon from the 5th District. Representative Susan Wild from the 7th District. They're all commenting. Dan Muser from the 9th District, Scott Perry from the 10th. They're all on here with comments and, you know, varying. Congressman Fred Keller from the 12th District, he says, once again, President Trump has shown America will not back down, and terrorists will be held accountable, and rogue states cannot continue to rule neighboring democracies through thuggery and intimidation. But I'm going down the list here. And at the bottom, I find two names, U.S. Representative Connor Lamb from the 17th District and U.S. Representative Mike Doyle from the 18th District. Two guys we've been begging to come on the show, and they haven't had time to do it. Nothing. They've said nothing as far as we can tell. Now I see that we have Sean. Sean, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. You know I always love joining you.
Well, listen, I was going to ask you about this as we went along here, but waiting for you to come on, I was looking at this list of all the headline of the piece is from the PA Penn Live Patriot News, how PA lawmakers responded to Trump's airstrike that killed a top Iranian military leader, and the guy you're running against. And another guy named Mike Doyle, who's also in Congress and represents a district next door to here, they're the only two on this list with nothing to say. Is that shocking to you?
No, it's not shocking to me. But I want everyone listening here, Republican, Democrat, or otherwise, independent, listen. Qasem Soleimani engineered attacks in Iraq with sophisticated IEDs that murdered thousands of U.S. troops, wounded thousands of civilians. He's wreaking havoc there now and has been for like the last decade. He funneled billions into Iran's terrorist machine to slaughter Americans and men, women, and children. Yet congressional Democrats, national Democrats, right, have denounced his killing. Now, what is that? Qasem Soleimani is one of the most evil terrorist leaders the world has ever known, at least of the last 20th and 21st century. So yet congressional Democrats have denounced his killing. To me, I can't wrap my mind around that.
Yeah, well, at least there some of them are commenting on it. We tried to get, so you know, we gave Representative Connor Lamb an invitation to come on the show or just give us a statement, and we got what we usually get from him, nothing, zero response. So anyway, that's for another, we'll talk about that in a minute. But the first question you mentioned what this Soleimani guy was all about. This is the question that I had, and maybe it's just because I'm stupid, but... this guy's a big guy with the Iranian military. Iraq is supposed to be on our side, and Iran is supposed to be an enemy. So, what was this guy's convoy doing in Baghdad, and what was he doing organizing demonstrations in Iraq? Is he like a welcome guest there?
No, listen. I'll tell you exactly what he was doing. When Soleimani was killed, he was about to pull the trigger on another major attack on U.S. diplomats and American personnel in Iraq. That's exactly what he was doing, and that's why he was killed. And one of the things that bothers me about the criticism of this attack is, listen, people need to understand that Soleimani was a legitimate military target that has done nothing but threaten and kill Americans and kill civilians for decades now. And so this idea that, oh, now Iran is going to be angry and this attack could lead to retribution, as opposed to what? The Iranian regime has been attacking and killing us for decades. And for God's sake, 3 days ago, they attacked an American embassy. You know, I mean, us killing a military leader, I don't see any benefit to treading lightly with the Iranian regime anymore. They've gone far too long. And they've not been punched back by this country at all. And this is the first, I think, of many punches. Ultimately, John, what I think this attack will do is deter further conflict with Iran.
You do. A lot of people think, you know, with everything from World War III to another Iraq war.
No, look, I think it's really important in this instance specifically to draw a distinction between targeting a terrorist, right? Essentially, which Obama did for 8 years with drones, and you never heard anyone criticize him on the left, for God's sake.
No.
But you can target a terrorist, right? And you can take out a terrorist with no collateral damage, by the way, right? And not be dragged into a protracted conflict with Iran, you know? And I think that the president, and we know how the president thinks on these types of issues, the president loathes protracted conflicts. And he's more in favor of precision strikes, and that's exactly what he did against Soleimani.
There's also some inconsistency when he didn't attack Turkey or join against, you know, in the Syrian border, that conflict a couple months ago. And when he called off an attack, there was going to be a rocket attack on, it was at Syria, and he said, how many people are going to be killed? And they told him, he said, you know what, it's not worth it. We're not doing that. And he got criticized for that by the Democrats for backing off. And now he's being criticized for being too risky.
Yeah. Look, I mean, President Trump, you know, I think Democrats, independents, and Republicans, I think at this point know that he could cure cancer. And
would
still probably figured out a way to be criticized.
Right.
But one of the things, John, this is important. My entire life, U.S. politicians have tread lightly on Iran because it controls so much of the world's oil and oil shipping lane. Donald Trump can confront Iran's evil directly today because fracking here in the U.S., specifically here in PA-17, makes us energy independent. And so all of these national Democrats that are on stage talking about banning fracking overnight here in western Pennsylvania diminish our ability to conduct strikes on military targets, like, for example, Iran, all around the world. So fracking, not only does fracking have a tremendous economic benefit here in western Pennsylvania, but it also gives us national security flexibility, and it gives the president the ability to conduct strikes globally against our enemies, and we should support that.
Yeah, you tweeted today about your personal reaction and your and what happened to you personally because of Soleimani in Afghanistan. Can you explain what that was?
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. Actually, I was in Afghanistan for 485 days, and I saw firsthand how entrenched Iran was in supporting the insurgents that we were fighting in Afghanistan. There was a strike in January of 2007, where my platoon was built the first combat outpost in Afghanistan. We were attacked by 300 enemy fighters. Now, we took the fight to the enemy, and we won the day. We killed all 300, and when we got on the site, we did what's called a sensitive site exploitation, or SSE, right? And we went on site, we realized that every machine gun, PKM, AK-47, RPG-9, armor-piercing rounds, the best, newest equipment you could possibly imagine, all fresh from an Iranian factory line. That's what we faced every single day. I mean, one of my trucks in my platoon rolled over a all plastic Italian TC-6 anti-tank mine, wounded four of my troops and killed my FO. An Iranian IED cell did that, and Soleimani was the architect of that. We should be cheering his death today as Americans, not criticizing a president for doing it.
And we're hearing that this guy was plotting to kill lots of Americans in lots of different places, and you mentioned that. So this was as much or more preemptive than retaliatory. A lot of people are looking at this as a retaliation for some of the things that you just mentioned there, and that's probably part of it, but it was more preemptive than anything, correct?
Right. And I think ultimately what this strike will do will prevent further conflict with Iran. Now, they'll probably respond with a cyber attack here or there, but ultimately the way that they'll respond to this attack is pretty much exactly probably what they've been doing for the last 20 years, you know? And it's about time that the United States hit back.
Now, Democrats are saying that this was a risky move. You know, all of them are prefacing it by saying that they agree that this guy was a rat and needed to die, but they don't like the way it was done. But they're also saying that they should have been consulted. Now, if you were in Congress, sitting in that seat, the 17th District, would you have expected to be consulted?
No, and here's why. The president is the commander-in-chief. Commander predisposes chief, right? It's his job. He needs to have the tactical flexibility and the strategic flexibility to act in a second's notice. If he believes that if we have intelligence that one of the world's worst terrorists is vulnerable, the president should be able to snap his fingers and say, go get him. Right. If we were to let Congress decide, first of all, the information would have been leaked. Most people in Congress can't keep their mouths shut. And this terrorist would have probably ended up dying of old age. So we need to give the president the flexibility to do his job as the commander in chief, as the commander on the battlefield.
Yeah, we're talking to Sean Parnell. He's a decorated combat veteran. He's seen what Soleimani was famous for in person. He's also running for Congress in District 17 against Connor Lamb. And again, Connor Lamb, we asked him to be on the show. We were going to have him on at 5:30 right after Sean if he wanted to do it. No response. And as I said, we can't – I don't know. Have you seen any comment from him anywhere?
No. And you know, he ran on – part of, you know, what, in 20s – when he ran on being a Marine. You'd think a Marine would have a comment on something like this.
Yeah, he is a Marine. There's a couple of different ways of looking at this. I want to be the devil's advocate here for a little bit, because I grew up during the Vietnam era, and I had friends whose lives were affected by that, and lots of them, not necessarily killed, but just that affected everything that everybody did for a long time, especially if you were between 19 and 26. Even back then, and I was a kid, I knew nothing, but I always wondered, listen, this is a little country in Southeast Asia. We could end this war in 20 minutes. Why are they sending me over there? Why do they want to send me over there? And then they want to put all these restrictions on me and what I'm allowed to do over there to win the war. How much of that is going on in the Mideast? There are times when I just say, you know, just let these people have at it. They've been fighting each other for 3,000 years. Let them kill each other and, you know, get back to us. And we'll, you know, especially now that, as you said, we don't need their oil. So just let them. Why are we over there, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, this is an important question, and I want to make sure I answer it the right way. And I'll use my own personal experience. In 2006, the eyes of this nation were wholeheartedly fixated on the Iraq War and the surge and weapons of mass destruction. I'm sure you remember those headlines.
Yeah.
But a byproduct of that meant that we had the flexibility as commanders on the ground to go after the enemy in the way that we were trained. The U.S. invests millions of dollars in training combat leaders. Decisions in combat, in war, need to be left to leaders on the ground so they can, you know, close with and destroy the enemy and fight the war that they know how. War should never be fought by attorneys in Washington, D.C. So the answer to that question is, a part of the answer to your question is soldiers need to always know the mission, okay? And politicians, when we send troops to war, not only do we need to have, you know, the mission laid out in front of our troops who are going into the fight, but there also needs to be a clearly defined end state. And what I mean by that is, what does victory look like?
Right.
We've been in Afghanistan since 2001. If I went in Afghanistan to every different platoon on the border there, I'd ask, hey, what's the mission? What's the mission? What's the mission? I bet you I'd get a different answer from every soldier I asked. And I'll tell you, that's a real problem. And so I think that's what the president is trying to do. I think the president is trying to say, okay, we don't want to be in these fights forever. What's the end state look like? And let's bring our boys home if we can't clearly define it.
Yeah, but what you just said, I agree with. But the president is a politician, but he was designated the commander in chief by the guys who put the government together, the founders. So you're always dealing with one politician. Sometimes we've had guys who, you know, have military experience, but Donald Trump sure doesn't have any. But he's calling the shots.
Right, right. Well, I mean, look, John, here's what I think. I think that if we send soldiers to war, right, that's an unbelievably difficult decision. But if we do it, they should know the mission and they should know what the end state looks like. But if we send soldiers to war, we have a moral obligation to win. Right, because otherwise those kids that you just talked about going to Vietnam, come back from that war and wonder what the hell they went for, right? So if we're going to send soldiers and we're going to make sure that we've got troops on the ground fighting, they better know the mission and we better win.
Yeah, I had a guy lived in front of me, my neighbor for several years. He was a Vietnam veteran, and he talked all the time about how frustrating it was when he was there. I can't remember the specifics, but they would be hit with some kind of an attack, and they'd want to retaliate, and they weren't allowed to because of some rule that they had. And he said it really was really frustrating for the guys over there.
Well, that's how it got to be in Afghanistan. We didn't have that issue in 2006, as I mentioned, because politicians were focused on the Iraq War. But when the strategy shifted from counterterror to counterinsurgency around 2008, counterinsurgency is basically when President Trump says we shouldn't be policing these places. That's what counterinsurgency is, a U.S. soldier presence in every village. And what happens when you do that, you spread our forces so thin that the enemy can elude you. You know, they can walk one mountain, one ridge line over and penetrate right into the heart of Afghanistan and avoid, you know. So counterinsurgency, I think that strategy is what caused us to lose the initiative in the war in Afghanistan and put us in a place where we are now. If we want success in Afghanistan, we can probably pull a large portion of our troops out and focus exclusively on kinetic strikes. You know, let's find the enemy and kill them, right, so that the government in Afghanistan can effectively secure and govern their own people, right? So shift from counterinsurgency back to counterterror, kill the worst of the worst, and in doing so, you give the government the time to grow and secure their people, as I mentioned. I think that's what I would do if I were calling the shots.
Does President Trump strike you as the kind of guy who gets that?
I do. I do think that he's the kind of guy that wants to go after the enemy. I think President Trump, I've never met or talked to him before, but my sense is that he does not like long, drawn out, protracted conflicts. He likes surgical strikes, clearly defined missions with end states. And I think that's part of the reason why the Afghan war has plagued him and bothered him so much. And he consistently asks, you know, the higher command, like, when can we get out? But Afghanistan at this point, it is a quagmire, and pulling out of Afghanistan needs to be done in a very delicate way if we're going to do it.
Hey, Sean, I'm out of time. I really appreciate you being on. Thanks for your service. Thanks for your expertise on this one. And we'll have you on again. Maybe we can get Connor Lamb on one of these days. Appreciate it.
Okay, John. Thanks, John. Take care.
All right. That's Sean Parnell, right. And he's running for Congress in the 17th District against Connor Lamb, also known around here, I'm sorry, as Mr. Invisible. Mr. Invisible. I'll be right back.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. In a brief address to the press at Mar-a-Lago today, President Trump said the killing of General Qassem Soleimani was not undertaken in an effort to begin a conflict with Iran. We took action last night to stop a war, Mr. Trump said. We did not take action to start a war.
We do not seek regime change. However, the Iranian regime's aggression in the region, including the use of proxy fighters to destabilize its neighbors, must end, and it must end now.
SRN News military affairs analyst Colonel Robert McGinnis says Soleimani was flying under the radar when he was killed by the airstrike.
Now, I think the leadership in Baghdad are tired of Soleimani and the interference of the Iranian regime. Even though there are a lot of Shiites in the government, Iraqi Shiites are not Iranian Shiites.
On Wall Street, the Dow down by 234 points, the NASDAQ dropped 71, the S&P 500 lower by 23. This is SRN News.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions are posted at textrules.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated marketing text messages. Message and data rates may apply.
Hi, I'm Tom from Kane 11, and I have one question for you. What size socks are you wearing right now? If you're like everyone else I've asked, you simply don't know. How could you? That's because until now, socks were made in one size fits all or just a couple of sizes to fit every size foot. But not at Kane 11. We make our socks in 11 individual sizes, from 7 to 17. That's right, 7 to 17. Great looks and colors to fit everyone's lifestyle. From cotton to wool or anything in between, Kane 11's got the perfect sock for you. Better yarns, better quality, just a better sock. If you don't love them just like we do, send them back for a full refund. That's the Kane 11 promise. Once you wear a pair of Kane 11's, I guarantee you'll never go back to wearing socks in multi-size ranges again.
Save 20% off your first order when you text SOCKS to 246810. That's text SOCKS to 246810. Text SOCKS to 246810.
Hugh Hewitt knows where his vote is going in 2020.
There's not going to be an election year recession. Democrats are so sad that people are going to keep their jobs and get wage increases. But if you vote for a Democrat next year, you're just crazy.
You're voting against your economic interest.
That's the election in a nutshell. Trump might drive you crazy, you might love him, it doesn't matter. I like this economy.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weekday mornings at 6, right before Mike Gallagher at 9 on AM 1250. The Answer.
If you're an employer, a business owner, if you have 5 to 100 employees, listen up. The cost of doing business continues to skyrocket, strangling your HR department with more regulations, administrative duties, and liability than ever. I'm John Steigerwald. Your health plan's a big part of that cost. Another year, another 10% rate hike, another $1,000 increase on your deductible, another hospital or doctor you can't go to because they're not in the network. Isn't it time for a change? Well, stop the insanity and call Marley Financial, the most innovative agency in the industry. Put an end to the annual increase. Give your employees a national network that all hospitals accept and reduce your monthly premiums by 20 to 30%. It doesn't matter when your renewal is. Marley can help today. Call 724-884-1496. Marley Financial, 724-884-1496. 724-884-1496.
Healthy pets, healthy people, focusing on a natural, holistic approach for human and animal wellness. Host Dr. Edmund Sulkowski and his guests discuss various topics on health and wellness for us and our companion animals. Airs each Saturday, live from 9 to 10 in the morning on 1250 AM, The Answer, giving you the opportunity to call in with your questions. A healthy pet is a happy pet, and being healthy makes people happy. Tune in, listen, learn, be well.
96 elephants are killed every day in Africa for their ivory. That's 35,000 a year. With your support, more poachers can be caught. With your voice, we can inspire more countries to ban ivory sales and reduce demand. Go to 96elephants.org and join more than a million people dedicated to saving Africa's elephants. Protect their home. Take action at 96elephants.org.
Stuck in traffic? We've got the answer.
There's lots of congestion out there on the inbound Parkway West, heavy from Airport Expressway to 60 Parkway Center Drive to the Fort Pitt Tunnel. Outbound busy Parkway Center Drive to Carnegie. All jammed up still in the Parkway East, outbound Boulevard of the Allies to Edgewood, Swissvale. Doesn't seem the usual volume on the inbound side. Outbound Liberty Bridge seeing some slowing, and outbound 28 volume delays from Veterans Bridge to 40th Street Bridge. That's a look at traffic. I'm Jenny Robinson.
AM 1250, The Answer. Weather.
This afternoon, partly sunny skies with a high 49. Times of rain tonight with a low 42. Mild tomorrow with periods of rain and drizzle and a high 50. Tomorrow night, overcast with a few showers around, mainly late with a low 43. And more rain for Saturday with a high of 46. With your AccuWeather forecast, I'm Gregory Patrick.
AM 1250 and FM 92.5. The Answer.
WPGP Pittsburgh.
A division of Salem Media Group. Listen on the Answer mobile app, smart speakers, TuneIn, iHeart, or radio.com.
We're finishing up the week. We're also still finishing up the year, 2019, and looking back at 2019. And it wasn't a very good year for the media. Jeffrey McCall, who writes for The Hill, compared the media in 2019 to the Cincinnati Bengals. That's pretty harsh. Jeffrey joins us now. Jeffrey, thanks for being here.
You're more than welcome.
That's kind of a low blow, isn't it, Jeffrey?
That's
Cincinnati
pretty cheap.
Bengals.
The Bengals had a really bad year, but in many ways the media did too. So sorry if the media feel upset about that. But you got to call them like you see them, John.
That's right. Well, you point out that the Bengals are going to get a number one draft pick, which they're very likely to screw up, by the way. But they're likely to get one for having a terrible year. But there's no reward for the media for stinking. In fact, it's the opposite, isn't it?
Yeah. In fact, the media keep digging a hole for themselves. And, you know, what's interesting is I think the media has gone full bore into trying to generate shrillness in the news and partisanship in the news as a way to try to get better ratings and more clicks on their website. But ironically, the opposite is happening because the public is turning on that, because the public really wants to have, you know, objective news. They want to have information. They want to have news that is relevant for them. And the media goes all sensationalism on them, and then the media, the public turns away. And I think this just shows that there's a great cultural disconnect between the people running these major news organizations on the East Coast and the public that they're supposedly there to serve.
Media credibility has been going down the toilet for a while. Do you think that this has anything to do with the, you know, the proliferation of media outlets? You know, the more media we get, the worse it performs. I mean, because there was, you know, even 20 years ago, there were nowhere near the number of media outlets available that there are now. The internet was kind of just getting started 20 years ago.
Well, you raise a good point. There are plenty of competitors out there, you know, for the eyes and ears of media news consumers. But on the other hand, I think one of the reasons we see so many media outlets springing up is because people have lost confidence in the media organizations that they used to rely on. And when they've got other opportunities to go different places now, they're taking advantage of that. And one thing I'd like to say, you mentioned that media credibility has been declining now for a number of years. That's true. And one thing I'd like to point out is a lot of people blame President Trump for the media credibility crisis that we're having now. And people need to keep in mind that the downward trajectory of media credibility was well underway 15 and 20 years ago. And that was long before Trump became a national political figure. Now, sure, he beats them up and criticizes CNN and whatnot, but I think he's just exploiting what the public already feels rather than generating that kind of public opposition.
I think with him, it seems to me that this is a guy who came along not being a politician, and he was a guy with a I-got-nothing-to-lose attitude, and he wasn't as afraid as other politicians, especially politicians on the right, who were felt that, you know, they were the most of the media were biased against them. I think Trump just was, he just didn't care. He said, I got nothing to lose. I'm not going to put up with these people. And he started calling it fake news, or at least whoever, somebody else called it that, and he picked up on it.
Yeah, he certainly played into the public mindset that the public was becoming disenchanted with the media. And so, and again, he felt like he had nothing to lose, which he probably didn't. And I think that there was, I think you're right, that there was a good tendency for many public figures to kowtow to the media and fear them. And Trump clearly does not.
He relishes throwing it back in their face. And that's gotten him votes, I think. Lots of them.
Well, again, I think this is one of those things where the general public is not that pleased with the media. Now, by the way, there are all kinds of surveys to point this out. You know, Gallup shows the media decline over the last 20 years, but there's a Rasmussen Report survey that came out late in 2019 which said that two-thirds of Americans describe themselves as angry with the media. And I think that's pretty significant when you've basically only got a third of the public that kind of thinks the media is doing a good job. And there was another report posted on Ballotpedia which says that 41% of Americans consider the media either to be unfriendly or an enemy of the American people. And I guess this all points out that, and as I point out in my column that was in The Hill, it is really time for the news industry to do some introspection and to kind of figure out why they have lost connection with the citizenry that the First Amendment was created for them to serve, and to try to find out some way to reinvent themselves. Now, I don't have a lot of hope necessarily that people sitting in corporate towers at NBC or CNN or the New York Times are understanding this problem, because if they did, I think they would address it already. But I really wish they would start to do a little more introspection and get out of their towers and kind of figure out why their credibility ratings are going down the drain.
Yeah, I think I worked in the media all my life for 40 years, and I worked in sports for a long time and still do. I worked in local TV mostly. But I get the feeling that the people who are running the big-time media outlets that are still around, CBS, ABC, NBC, and even the big cable outlets, they're old, so many of them, and they still think that whatever they say, these people, these dum-dums out there, especially in flyover country, we'll tell them what it is. We don't have to worry about them. And they haven't gotten the clue that people don't need them anymore.
Yeah, people don't need them, but also I think they don't realize that citizens can sort out for themselves, you know, what the news means. They don't need somebody to push agendas on them or to talk down to them. And I think that's one of the things we see now that's different than a generation or two ago, is that the news media, I think, tends, and again, I'm not trying to broad brush all the news media.
Right.
There is great work being done in certain corners. But
mm-hmm.
generally speaking, I think the executives in those corporate towers that I complain about look down their noses at the public and think that they know more than they do and that it's important for them to tell them what to think, when really I think that the citizenry, the general public, doesn't want to be told what to think, and they want information and they don't want to be lectured to.
We're talking to Jeffrey McCall. He writes for The Hill. He wrote a piece in which he compared the media in 2019 to the Cincinnati Bengals. What a low blow that was. But so what were some of the media low points in 2019 that struck you?
Well, there are several. And, I mean, I mentioned a few of them in the column, but, you know, I could have gone on and on if
right.
I'd wanted to. But, you know, beginning just last January, you know, when they had those Covington Catholic High School students in the nation's capital, and the media just went on a frenzy, and mostly they were just taking the lead from what they saw on social media, and they totally mischaracterized that story altogether. And also, by the way, when you go to Washington, D.C., I'm sure you've been there a number of times, you can find a demonstration just about on every street corner.
Right.
And so here the news media exaggerated the importance of a few Covington Catholic High School kids standing on a corner and getting into a confrontation, quote-unquote, with a Native American, and they made a big deal about that. So, I mean, that was where it started, but then we followed that up with the news media taking seriously the Jesse Smollett situation.
Boy.
And let's face it, that had, you know, scam written all over it from the get-go. But think of the number of days spent on Good Morning America, people agonizing about poor Jesse Smollett being a victim.
Oh, Robert Roberts was in tears.
Oh, my heavens, yes. And, you know, those are kind of like one-off, isolated, sensational things. But I think looking at bigger picture things, you can look at how the Mueller investigation was reported. I think you can look at the coverage of the Democrat presidential candidate so far, which has been pretty vacuous when you get right down to it.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention, then, the way the impeachment situation has been covered all fall, where it's really kind of non-nuanced and devoid of facts, but really high on profiling grandstanding politicians who want to make a name for themselves.
Yeah, I came up with a name for what I saw happening, and I think I started using it with the Covington kids story, and I think it permeates a lot of what's going on at CNN and MSNBC especially, and that's it's wishful thinking journalism.
That's a great way to put it.
They latch onto a story and say, oh, boy, this is a good one. We got them now. And they look for everything in the story that's going to fit what they want their narrative to be, and they ignore the little items that might not fit into that narrative.
And wishful thinking journalism, as you defined it there, is a very dangerous thing for our nation, because our nation, you know, has many complex problems in front of it, and we really need to get some information from the people that presumably are there to serve our interests. And when they're only serving their own interests and pushing their own narratives and doing wishful thinking, they're serving their own selfish purposes and not the purposes that the First Amendment was designed to put in place, and that was to serve the information needs of a democracy.
Yeah, and I still wonder how much of it is because of the amount of competition. You know, Walter Cronkite and Tom Brokaw, they didn't have to worry about a fragmented audience so much. They figured they had their regular viewers. They could tell them anything they want. Or maybe they felt like because there were only two other at the national level, two other competitors, that it was easy for people to compare, because if you don't like what Walter Cronkite's doing, it's one switch on your dial and you're over to the next guy.
Well, I think your point is well taken, and I agree to a large degree that the lessened competition in the past is a factor, and that there certainly are more news outlets now. But I guess my instinct is that is part of the picture, but that also a big part of the picture is just a decline in professional standards and professional motivations. And that's one thing I sometimes see when, you know, I look at reports on some of the cable networks, and, you know, like last fall when MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell came on and told us that he had all the goods on Donald Trump obtaining loans that were co-signed by Russian oligarchs.
Yep.
I'm thinking, wait a second, do you have the goods on that? And he only had one source that was, you know, dubious at best. But NBC let him go on the air live with that. And I'm just thinking, you know, there was a time where you mentioned like Walter Cronkite, and in my column, you know, I talk about Frank Reynolds. Those guys would never have gone on air live with a story that was so poorly sourced.
Yeah, I worked in local TV news for a station here for 25 years, over 20 years, KDKA. And when I started a million years ago, the guy who was reading the news at 6 and 11 was the managing editor of the newscast. And if he saw a story, he'd say, I'm not doing that story. And he would yell at some young producer to get him, you know, don't give me this. Get me something better than this. I'm not going on the air with this. I wonder how much of it is the editors now, the people in the executive producer positions.
Yeah, the people behind the scenes. And I really think that is part of the cultural change in the journalism world, that careless and needless mistakes are going to crop in when we're pushing agendas and riding high horses, as opposed to saying we have to get this right because the public is relying on us to get it right. And when you're self-serving as opposed to serving the interests of the public, more careless mistakes are going to happen, in my opinion.
One of my favorites is ABC using footage from a gun range in Kentucky and saying it was the Syrian border.
Oh, my gosh.
That was bad enough. But they said that on the ABC Evening News. Did they ever do a good enough job of correcting it and admitting the mistake? That was a big one.
Well, not in my opinion. They did not do enough to really correct that mistake. Now, who knows how that happened, whether that was an intern behind the scenes, but somebody made a boneheaded mistake. And again, that happens. I mean, journalists are human beings, too. But the newsroom culture allowed that to happen because somebody felt like it was okay to play fast and loose with video that they just found on the internet. But once that mistake was exposed, ABC owned it to us to come on and just say, this was where we had a breakdown. This is a problem we had. We regret this error. And they did go on with a kind of mild, oh, this was an error, sorry about that. But it was not as profound as it needed to be. And again, there was no explanation of the culture that created that mistake in the first place.
Hey, Jeffrey, I'm out of time. Great stuff. I really appreciate it. Great column at The Hill. You write there a lot. It's about the media on this column that you did today that I really liked. Glad I got you on. Appreciate you coming on with us.
You're welcome.
Okay, and that's Jeffrey McCall of The Hill. We'll be right back. Employer, a business owner, if you have 5 to 100 employees, listen up. The cost of doing business continues to skyrocket, strangling your HR department with more regulations, administrative duties, and liability than ever. I'm John Steigerwald. Your health plan's a big part of that cost. Another year? another 10% rate hike, another $1,000 increase on your deductible, another hospital or doctor you can't go to because they're not in the network. Isn't it time for a change? Well, stop the insanity and call Marley Financial, the most innovative agency in the industry. Put an end to the annual increase. Give your employees a national network that all hospitals accept and reduce your monthly premiums by 20 to 30%. It doesn't matter when your renewal is. Marley can help today. Call 724-884-1496. Marley Financial, 724-884-1496. 724-884-1496. They blow into town with the wind, rain, and hail, and out-of-town storm chasers going door-to-door, often posing as a local company offering a quick fix to desperate homeowners. If you've had damage to your roof, windows, siding, or gutters and downspouts, you may be eligible to get them replaced or repaired free of charge. Just be careful who you call. Visit WindowsRUsPittsburgh.com for a free inspection from one of their highly trained appraisers. With over 50 years in home remodeling, Windows R Us is the area's premier exterior replacement company for roofs, siding, gutters and downspouts, doors, and of course windows. If damage isn't your issue and you just want something new, you'll love their no-pressure approach, no hidden fees, and one of the fastest turnaround times in the industry. A company who will never skip town when it comes to honoring their warranty. Visit WindowsRUsPittsburgh.com. Mention STAG for an additional 10% off. Windows R Us, proud sponsor of the Jerk of the Week, heard every Friday on the John Steigerwald Show. WindowsRUsPittsburgh.com.
Whether looking for a restaurant for dinner reservations or shopping for a major purchase, online reviews are a big part of the research consumers consider before making a decision. Unfortunately, many mattress review sites are paid by mattress companies to recommend their products, which makes it hard to trust the reviews. At the Original Mattress Factory, we do things differently. We value transparency and honesty, and we don't pay for reviews or mislead our customers. Read reviews from our actual customers at originalmattress.com.
At the Original Mattress Factory, we believe that selecting your new mattress is a decision that's too important to rush. You should only purchase a mattress when you're ready and you're assured you got the best value. That's why we offer our lowest and best price to everyone every day. You don't have to wait for a holiday weekend, haggle with a sales associate, or face the pressure of a today-only sale. You can take your time and make a choice that is right for you, knowing that you'll always get our best price. Visit originalmattress.com to learn more.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions are posted at textrules.us. Texting and rules for recurring automated marketing text messages, message and data rates may apply.
Hi, I'm Tom from Kane 11, and I have one question for you. What size socks are you wearing right now? If you're like everyone else I've asked, you simply don't know. How could you? That's because until now, socks were made in one size fits all or just a couple of sizes to fit every size foot. But not at Kane 11. We make our socks in 11 individual sizes from 7 to 17. That's right, 7 to 17. Great looks and colors to fit everyone's lifestyle. From cotton to wool or anything in between, Kane 11's got the perfect sock for you. Better yarns, better quality, just a better sock. If you don't love them just like we do, send them back for a full refund. That's the Kane 11 promise. Once you wear a pair of Kane 11's, I guarantee you'll never go back to wearing socks in multi-size ranges again.
Save 20% off your first order when you text SOCKS to 246810. That's text SOCKS to 246810. Text SOCKS to 246810.
The John Steigerwald Show, AM 1250, The Answer.
And now, it's time for The Jerk of the Week, starring John Steigerwald.
Well, we have a special treat for you today. It's not the Windows R Us Jerk of the Week, it's Jerk of the Year time. That's right, there were lots of worthy candidates in 2019, just about everybody in the Democrat Party, and definitely everybody running for the Democrat nomination for president, and especially Beto O'Rourke, who was a strong candidate. It was Jerk of the Week a couple of times for him. Same with Alexandria Overrated Cortez. And there were several jerks who had more of an impact on the world than our winner. But after going through the list from 2019, I settled on Jussie Smollett. That's the guy who claimed he was attacked by a couple of white guys at 2 in the morning on a Chicago street when it was about 10 below zero. They beat him up, poured bleach on him, and then put a noose around his neck. Now, I don't know about you, but I didn't believe it from the get-go. And here's what our Jerk of the Year had to say about it.
I've been truthful and consistent on every single level since day one. I would not be my mother's son if I was capable of one drop of what I've been accused of. This has been an incredibly difficult time, honestly one of the worst of my entire life. But I'm a man of faith, and I'm a man that has knowledge of my history, and I would not bring my family, our lives, or the movement through a fire like this. I just wouldn't. So I want to thank my legal counsel from the bottom of my heart, and I would also like to thank the state of Illinois for attempting to do what's right. Now, I'd like nothing more than to just get back to work and move on with my life. But make no mistakes, I will always continue to fight for the justice, equality, and betterment of marginalized people everywhere. So again, thank you for all the support. Thank you for faith, and thank you to God. Bless y'all. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and you should be feeling really good if you're marginalized and Jussie's out there fighting for you. Sorry, but jerk isn't a strong enough word for a guy who's that much in love with himself and tries to get away with a stupid story like that. But Jussie Smollett is the Windows R Us Jerk of the Year.
The Jerk of the Week is brought to you by Windows R Us, Pittsburgh's premier exterior replacement company. Expert repair and replacement for windows, roofs, siding, doors, gutters, and downspouts. Why pay double? Visit WindowsRUsPittsburgh.com.
Yes, and by the way, feel free to nominate anyone you'd like for our Jerk of the Week, our Windows R Us Jerk of the Week. We do it here every Friday. You can reach me at Twitter, at StargerWorld, and make the nomination, and we'll consider it. We did a segment on the media right before the Jerk of the Year, and so I just come across I just came across something here. You know that it was a bad night for Qasem Soleimani, but back in 2017, thanks to Newsbusters here, I see that Time Magazine, in their piece about the 100 most influential people in the world, referred to this guy as a combination of James Bond, Erwin Rommel, and Lady Gaga, all rolled into one. Yep. And that's who he is. To the Middle Eastern Shiites, he is James Bond, Erwin Rommel, and Lady Gaga. I'll end on that note. Aaron Burr, another good week of producing for me, and I will talk to you on Monday. Thanks. Bye.
The John Steigerwald Show is a production of AM 1250 The Answer and Salem Media Group.